Lord and God. And who am I? A poor little worm, your servant. Most holy Lord, I wish to love you. Most sweet Lord, I wish to love you. O Lord my God, I have given you my whole heart and my whole body, and I most earnestly desire, if I only knew how, to do still more for you. Amen. Please be seated. One advantage to doing the services at home is that you get to sing. It's good to be here, very good to be here, but it's hard to be here in that regard. I'm Rick Bellows. I'm here today because I love this church and come here, but also because I'm a Franciscan. And today is the feast of the Saint Francis, the day the church around the world remembers the most favorite of medieval saints. At least many people think he's their favorite. Saint Francis was a man who was a wild guy, kind of like the all-American football player at a college. He was wild and crazy. He was party animal. He was someone who would be there at the parties, and he with his buddies, he went off to war. Italy had city-states then, and that was a time when cities would fight each other. They would take prisoners of war and then ransom them and gain money that way. Francis's father, however, was not willing to pay when his son, a very bad soldier, not very good at the soldiering thing, he would not pay. And so Francis rotted in the jail for about a year. And finally, he got so sick that he was deemed worthless by his captors and sent home to die. But Francis didn't die. He recovered, and while he was recovering, birds helped him ease the trauma of war and peel. The flight of the birds attracted him, and the song. And he felt a closeness to the birds from then after, for they had brought a certain healing to him. And he would preach to the birds. The birds would listen or put up with him as he preached anyway. And he was very indebted to them all his life. He heard in his recovery, he heard the voice of God saying, "Rebuild my church." And so he rebuilt. He took it literally at first, and he went to rebuild the ruined church. But then he learned that it was about people. The church is the people. And so his vision grew to understand that it was to grow the people of the church. This really came to a head for him when he was before a leper. And he saw this leper and was disgusted by him. And he forced himself to go up to the leper and kissed him. And this broke some shell in Saint Francis. It broke the shell, and his heart was opened up, and he had an affinity to people from thereafter. He saw people in a different light. He saw through their sickness or their deformity or whatever. He saw through any obstacle to seeing them as a human being, and he would love them and care for them. And St. Francis St. Francis would try to get other people to see people as people. And that escalated and grew. He had an affinity for the poor. He saw people using power over them, and he had an understanding of the dynamics of power. He worked that to his advantage in that he was one of the few people in medieval times who had success at dealing with the poor and connecting them to the church. Most people who worked with the poor and were advocates for the poor in those days were thought of to be enemies of the church because they blamed the church for the poverty of the poor. And so there was an oppositional relationship between the people and the church. And then, therefore, the leaders of that movement would get excommunicated. But Francis didn't blame the church for the poor. They just accepted the reality for them. In fact, embraced them by becoming one with them. He took on voluntary poverty, and that not because he loved poverty, although he did think of her as Lady Poverty, and he was wed to poverty in a sense, but he did it to draw close and to make a connection to real people. He was a radical in that sense. There are a lot of animal stories with St. Francis. In fact, somewhere here I have a book that I got in 1964 for my fifth birthday, St. Francis and the Animals. I think it was very influential on me. And one of the greatest stories in this book is the story of the Wolf of Gubbio. I like the story because in it, everyone changes. Everyone changes. It's about a wolf who's in the village of Gubbio would attack people and their animals. And so the people were terrorized by this wolf, and Francis heard about it, so he went to the town and went up to the wolf. I don't know how he did that, but he went up to the wolf, and he tamed it. He made an agreement. He asked the wolf, "Why are you terrorizing the people?" And the wolf said, "Well, I'm hungry." And so he made the deal with the people of Gubbio to feed the wolf. So the people changed, they became more generous, and the wolf changed, he became tame, and Francis changed, he understood animals even a little better. He once was given a fish by a fisherman, and Francis got it during the sermon. I don't know, maybe there's something fishy about that. If any of you have a fish for me today, I'll take it. But Francis put the fish back in the water. I guess he was preaching outside, and he received the attention of the fish during the whole sermon, and the fish listened to the whole sermon. I told you there's something fishy about. He listened to the whole sermon, and he swam away at the end of it. So Francis had this special connection with animals that was at peace. There was a peace between animals and Francis. And that peace is a very important theme in Franciscan spirituality. Peace is something that we seek with all people. We have it or seek it with all people. And it's a value that we uphold. There's a prayer attributed to St. Francis that many of you people probably have known. It's on page 833. It begins, Most High, Lord, make us a channel of your peace. And that prayer, believe it or not, is attributed to St. Francis. It's a Franciscan prayer, but it was not around in Francis's day. It first shows up in 1912 and is first connected to St. Francis in the 1920s. So, and that was because it was put on the back of a funeral prayer card. So that's how the Franciscan prayer became attributed to St. Francis in the 20th century. But the notion of peace is very important to Franciscan spirituality. In fact, it's one of the greatest stories of that is when St. Francis went to make peace with the Sultan in the war between the, what's the word? Crusades, in the Crusades. And St. Francis was kind of sent by the cardinal in charge of the war as a way of kind of denigrating the whole process. He was sent to kind of make it a joke, because you send this raggedy monk, friar, to make peace, what good of it can come from it? But Francis took the job very seriously, and he went and he was able to be heard. People heard him. I think absolute humility opens doors. Humility opens doors. His humility allowed the people not to see him as a threat, the Muslims to not see him as a threat. And even though they were at war, he was accepted and taken to the Sultan. And the Sultan heard him out and listened to what he had to say. St. Francis then was able to make a relationship with the Sultan, and they connected on a spiritual level. The Sultan would speak of Islam and Francis of Christian faith, and they would, they really connected on a very deep spiritual level. They didn't make peace, but shortly thereafter, the Christians were starving and the Muslims came and gave them bread. There was a work towards peace. And it didn't achieve full peace, but a work towards peace. Authenticity is something that is another Franciscan ideal. Being true to yourself. You are who you are before God. Nothing more, and I would add nothing less for the 21st and 20th century. You are who you are before God, nothing more, but also nothing less. I think we tend to think of ourselves either as too good for God or as not good enough. We can't accomplish for God because we're not good enough, or because we're too good. We don't need God in our life. So Francis would say, no, be realistic, be authentic to who you are, and honest about that, and give that to God, and allow God to work with that. And so Franciscan spirituality seeks to accept people as who they are and where they are. That's why Francis had a sense of embodiment and about incarnation, about being in the presence of God and carrying God within us. He felt that everybody could play a role in that, and so he set up the first creche, you know, the Christmas scene with Mary and Joseph and Jesus and the shepherds and all little statues that we have in our houses and put out at Christmas time. He's the first one to do that, except he did it with live animals and with people, with poor people. And so poor people were communicating the gospel to the rich. And that was very powerful. It had a sense of incarnation, creating a sense of embodiment to the whole story that made it real to the people. The living nativity really touched people's hearts, and the story became alive to them, many of them for the first time. So Francis gave to the world a new way of looking at people, a new way of looking at God, and it had a profound effect from where Francis was in Assisi. It moved out towards Florence and then throughout the rest of the world up to Russia and to all throughout Europe and throughout the whole world after that. And the movement was that God was seen outside in creation, in the birds, in the animals, in nature. God was seen outside. You can see it in art, the movement from inside, where all the good things happen inside, in the chapel, or in the church, or in the cathedral. And paintings would depict the Annunciation in a building, or in a room, or in a chamber, or inside. But after Francis, it was okay to have all of that outside in the world, and outside art would depict miracles happening on the streets after Francis. All of that started after Francis in the art world. So he had a profound effect on the culture of his day. And the people saw the world differently because of that, of him. Miracles can happen on the street. Our legacy in that is church without walls, happening on the street. How could you have church on the street? Well, we have it because the people are there on the street. And so it's very meaningful to the people to meet them where they are, very Franciscan. So if St. Francis were here today, I would thank him for the insights and the shift of power that he taught about. He wouldn't allow people to have, he wouldn't allow people to abuse their power over people. In fact, he tried to do things to give away power and give away the power over people. He did this by giving away all of his property, because property distorts the relationship with people when you need to defend it. We see that in our gospel lesson today, where this man has, this landowner has to defend property. He has to defend the property, so he sends slaves after slave, and they all get killed or stoned or beaten, and he still sends them. Now that's the definition of crazy, isn't it? Just do the same thing over and over and get the same result and expect a different result. He's crazy. But the man does that. And then he sends his son. Why didn't he go in the first place and throw the tenants out when they were acting badly? Why did he send his son, whom they also killed? Why did he do that? It's really an unfortunate quandary. The people, he saw people as disposable. at least one could say. People is disposable because he had power over them. He could send them and they could be disposed of. Or you could reasonably think that the parable was about property and the need to defend it and how it could distort people. So we all know that we have to defend our turf, our IRAs, our gold, our valuables, our home, our state, our city, our village, our country. So St. Francis embraced poverty so he wouldn't have to defend anything and distort the relationship with people. Now Jesus, to be sure, took the interpretation of this parable in a different direction, but that's the beauty of parables. They can stand for more than one thing at once. And so Jesus took it in a different direction by quoting Psalm 118, 22, and 23 about the stone and the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing, and it is amazing in our eyes. I thought at first, when I heard that it was Jesus quoting Queen Elizabeth I, because that's what she said when she was made queen. When her sister died, the sister who was trying to kill her, find an excuse to kill her, because she thought Elizabeth was plotting against her, but then her sister died, and so Elizabeth thought the people were coming to arrest her and execute her, but they were really coming to tell her that she was made queen. She quoted Psalm 118. So it wasn't Jesus quoting Elizabeth, that would cause a time warp. It was both of them quoting Psalm 118. So Jesus went on to interpret himself in the role of the son, killed by the first tenants, and the landowner as God, who gets rid of the old tenants, and the church to be the new tenants. The old tenants to be the chief priests and the scribes, at least they were worried that they were the analogy to the old tenants, and God then surely can beg, as he begs during each fall stewardship campaign. It is always stewardship in the fall. And so the landowner in the end gets the produce. I hope you noticed that. He got the produce. So he gets it in the end. Well, Francis is a tremendous influence on my life and very valuable lessons he's taught me about people and about the value of nature, creation, and the importance of it is a sign that it bears the mark of the Creator. All of us do, everything does, bears the mark of Creator. The creation bears the mark of the Creator. And so I give thanks to Francis for teaching me these lessons, and I pray that we all may learn from Francis and may find strength in him and courage to be who we are before God, and realizing that that's enough. To be who we are and follow that to its logical conclusion, to be who we are before God. Nothing more and nothing less. Amen.